Welcome to Bird Banter with Boreal Bruce.
Episode 2.
Okay, the sound of snow crunching underfoot as we head to the J-trap makes it hard to hear the kerchunkery of red-winged blackbirds waiting for signs of the marsh to melt, the kadir kadir of passing killdeer, and the honks of geese looking for open waters matched by our own impatience as we wait for migrants to arrive. Welcome to the second episode of Bird Banter with Boreal Bruce. Today we have a number of topics that we're going to cover. First, we're going to be talking a little bit about Earth Day, which is happening April 22nd, as everybody perhaps knows. We're going to be talking a little bit about our Tree Swallow Box program. We're going to be covering an update of birds that have arrived. We're going to be talking briefly about our Raise the Roost program to keep the momentum going towards people donating to provide accommodation for our visiting volunteers. I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the talks that I've been doing recently to try to raise money for that program. And we are going to be talking with a couple of guests. A couple of our volunteers have arrived. Nick Aliotto and Francis Whalen are here in studio, so we're going to be talking to them about their experience that they've had previous to coming to the marsh and about how things at the marsh are fitting into their overall plans. And we're also going to be talking about a bird rendezvous that we're having at the Kearns Public School, where a couple of classes from Central Public are going to be meeting with the kids at Kearns coming up on May 1st. So we're going to start off today with our bird update for the period of April 13th to the 21st. So birds that have been seen in the area would include just recent arrivals of hooded and common mergansers. Killdeers are present. We just recently have seen some American kestrels. Sandhill cranes have moved in, and the numbers of turkey vultures and American robins are on the increase, as are northern harriers. The other bird that is present still in very large numbers are common redpolls, which with the recent above zero temperatures may persuade the redpolls to move on. We're still waiting for the first American tree sparrow to arrive. We were looking at our banding logs from last year, and at this time last year, we were having days of catching 160 plus tree sparrows, as well as song sparrows and flickers and all sorts of species that haven't showed up yet. I was reading on an account online the other day about birding in Algonquin Park, and they were noting that some species are up to 19 days later than average. So we're really seeing that with the recent ice storms and the persistent grip of winter, we're still waiting for birds to arrive. So so we're all patiently waiting for arrivals. But by the time we're talking next week, we are anticipating that we're going to get all sorts of birds back. So we'll have more to comment on next week. So talking about Earth Day for a moment, it's been our tradition for the past 6 or 7 years that we use Earth Day as an opportunity at the Hillerton Marsh Research and Education Center to get volunteers to come out and clean out tree swallow boxes. So we have about 400 tree swallow boxes that are scattered across the area. We have boxes along Highway 569, which is the main artery to get to the marsh. As well, we have boxes at the Nulisker Sewage Lagoon, the North Cobalt Sewage Lagoons, and we also have boxes at the Engelhardt Sewage Lagoon. So with the amount of snow and the effort to get to the boxes would just be too great right now, so we are going to have to put off the tree swallow clean out for another week. The tree swallows will be arriving very soon. And once the tree swallows arrive, they start to stake out boxes that they will defend against other pairs of tree swallows. The issue with tree swallow boxes is that they need to be cleaned out annually because the females need to build a nest in order to produce eggs. And the we need to make sure that the boxes are cleaned out because sometimes the boxes will be used by mice or potentially by wasps. So we need to clean them out every spring anyway. So we're going to wait for the conditions to let us get to the boxes. And one of the main reasons that we put up the boxes to begin with is that for whatever reason, tree swallows have to nest in a cavity, which is essentially a hole in a tree. But they don't have the ability to create the hole themselves. So they usually will take over a woodpecker hole or a natural cavity in a tree. But putting up the boxes really helps them out. And over the last 25 years, the tree swallow population in Northern Ontario has gone down by over 30%. So putting the boxes up is a really positive way to help out. But the big issue with these boxes, as I mentioned, is they have to be cleaned out. So I've seen people that are going they actually go out to purchase boxes, and sometimes the boxes don't have an entrance for people to clean the old nest out. So it's of incredible importance to be able to do that. So it's easy to find plans to build boxes if that's something that you're interested in doing. So that's a really critical point, so that the boxes have to be cleaned out. So if you're going to put boxes up, you have to be prepared to put that time commitment in to clean them out. And the other important aspect, if you're going to put boxes up, you want to put them in the right habitat. Tree swallows prefer open spaces, and they don't want to have any saplings or any kind of obstruction to get into the box itself. The other issue is that the entrance hole has to be a specific size. If it's too big, they won't want to use it. And the other issue, if it's the hole's too big, that other birds will compete with them. Birds like European starlings will fight with tree swallows for those entrances. The other species that will use the boxes are eastern bluebirds, which is a beautiful bird that many people may be aware of. So that's another species that we would like to encourage. So if people are looking for plans, they can visit the marsh website, which is www.hillertonmarsh.com. So moving on, we're going to have a quick chat here with Francis and Nick. Nick comes from Uxbridge, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And Francis all the way from Michigan. So we're going to learn a little bit more about Nick and Francis. So it's interesting that Nick had applied for our intern position last year that we ended up giving that job to Sarah Bonnet, and Nick found an excellent opportunity to volunteer at Mackinac.
Oh, I was hired.
You were hired.
Yeah,
okay,
hired,
so
yeah.
we'll let you take it away. Tell us a bit about that.
So, my bird banding career kind of began after I graduated university. I knew that's what I wanted to get into, so I applied for an internship at Thunder Cape Bird Observatory in Thunder Bay, Ontario. And, you know, I went out there for about 2 months for their fall season in 2016 or 2017. And, you know, liked it a lot, and I especially liked doing the owl program. I was lucky enough to be there for that. And after that, I just, you know, scoured the job boards, you know, looking for more bird banding work in some capacity, and I stumbled upon an organization in Northern Michigan called the Mackinac Straits Raptor Watch. And I was lucky enough to be hired as an assistant owl bander for a spring season, and that was amazing. And then, as Bruce was saying, I heard about their internship here at the Marsh. I applied, but because of my lack of songbird experience, I was a little short. The owls was a plus, but needed a little more, so I was, you know, disheartened. But because of that, I got hired back by the same organization the next fall as the head owl bander. So I got to have another successful season, and then I was lucky enough this year to be able to land the position here, which I was hoping for. I'm super excited to be here for too. So it's good to be here.
Awesome. And one of the things that in talking with Nick, I know he's looking forward to in the fall that to get a chance to ban some boreal owls. So
yeah, definitely.
So that's going to be a bonus. And one of the things that Nick has been persistent with me is to try to do some spring banding, which will be to try for some spring owls. So when I was at the International Bird Observatory Conference, I talked to someone who sells solar-powered GPS units to track the movement of owls. And he suggested that we attempt to try to catch some long-eared in the spring, with the suggestion that if we were to catch long-eared in the spring and put those locators on them, that that would be a better indication of a bird that's probably a local bird. Whereas if we're catching them in the fall, we're not actually sure if they're a local bird or not. And the beauty of these solar panel GPS trackers is that when a bird flies close to a cellular tower, a cell tower, they dump all that info. So they're a great way to, so Nick and Francis are going to be attempting some spring owls. So that'll be exciting. So Francis, let's hear your story now.
Well, after I graduated from university, I actually worked with plants for a while, a few years, and I'd be out in the field measuring plants and such, and I would see, like, kestrels fly over and think, man, I wish I was working with them. So I eventually got hired as a naturalist at the same organization that Nick worked for, Mackinac Straits Raptor Watch, and then that was a spring job, and then the summer we did a lot of kestrel nestling banding, so we drove around. We ended up banding over 100 kestrel nestlings, and so that's kind of where I started banding, and then I was hired by them along with Nick in the fall for their owl banding program. So we did another season in the Mackinac Straits area and took the winter off and then came here.
Awesome. And can you give us a little more information about how it is that you band nestling kestrels?
So we were lucky enough to go with someone who had been monitoring the kestrel nest boxes pretty closely. So we were able to line it up so that we could go when they were the correct age to be banded, because you want to band them when they're
a couple weeks, I think.
So that you can sex them reliably.
Right on.
And so we would go around to the nest boxes and, you know, lower them down and open them up and take the babies out. Sometimes we had to climb ladders.
Awesome. So essentially, for those listening that aren't exactly sure, so a kestrel nest box is similar in a sense to the tree swallow nest boxes, except it's much bigger. Mm-hmm. The entrance hole is very large.
Yeah, it's a big hole.
And the advantage of banding a kestrel in its nest box is that you know exactly where that bird started its life, so that if it's encountered by another bander, then that's a huge advantage to be able to do that. So, it must be really exciting to go to a box and then find the young kestrels mm-hmm. in there. So
super feisty.
Are they?
But it was also cool because we were helping out with the kestrel genoscaping project. So we were taking feather samples from each nestling so that they could kind of map where the certain kestrels were coming from based on their genes. So it was cool to like help out with that project,
which
was
that sounds
a
neat.
Part of it. So that was interesting too. But and it was cool. Each you know, nest box, some were really docile and others were super mean and feisty. So it was a surprise every time. You never knew what was going to be in there. Nothing. Sometimes just eggs.
Awesome.
You didn't know.
So yeah.
It was cool.
So Francis, we were talking earlier that you are excited about the prospect of trying to catch some kestrels and some hawks in the area, because I understand you're going to be, after you leave us after the spring, you're going to be working in Wisconsin doing some raptor banding.
Yeah, I'm going to be going to Cedar Grove, which is in, I guess, Sheboygan County of Wisconsin. So it's on Lake Michigan, and they have a pretty extensive hawk trapping program. So we'll be
fantastic. What hawks are you looking forward to catching the most?
I mean, it'll be cool. I'm really looking forward to catching some peregrine falcons.
Wow. Actually. That would be great.
I love kestrels, like I said, but they don't really catch a lot of them there, so
yeah.
I'm sure I'll get sick of red tails.
So when I was at the Mackinac Raptor Fest, one of the speakers there was Eugene Jacobs, who's done a lot of work on raptors and indeed on saw-whets in Wisconsin. And you were saying that you went to a raptor banding workshop that he put on.
Yeah, so he does them in, like, I think late spring and then again in fall, several workshops a year where you can go and, like, learn all kinds of tricks of the trade, different techniques for trapping and, you know, how to identify what you want to catch and the best way to catch that and thing. It was just a really valuable experience.
Fantastic. And that led to you having taken that course, helped you get that job.
Yeah.
Yes. And so one of the things as well that we were talking about earlier is that the bird banding world is really neat because there's all these connections. So it's kind of neat that that I had the chance to meet Eugene. He and Ed Pike from Mackinac had caught some of our owls, and here you folks have migrated here from there. So it's that's a neat connection. So we're going to be having you two back on in the upcoming weeks, because it's nice to get these owl and raptor banders that are now learning to take songbirds out of the net. So so we'll be having you back on to hear how things are shaping up at the marsh.
Definitely.
So thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce.
Right on. So so that was Nick and Francis. We're also going to be joined by some other volunteers that we're going to be bringing on. So we have a couple of people coming from Virginia, and we have a fellow that's coming to us from Bishop University in Montreal. So so we'll be updating that as more volunteers round out our research crew that we're going to have at the marsh this spring. So the other topic that I wanted to touch upon briefly is our Raise the Roost program. We are just about, I think we're close to $9,000 raised now, which is fantastic. So I really appreciate all of the contributions and donations that people have made to the program. Just to remind people if they don't, or to let people know if they don't know about it, what the Raise the Roost program is, we are looking for donations so that we can accommodate our visiting volunteers. This spring, all of our volunteers are going to be sleeping in tents, which is roughing it a bit. And we used to be able to accommodate them in above the community, the Hillierton Community Hall, but that space is no longer available to us. So we are looking to purchase a 64-foot trailer to house our volunteers and take care of them, so that they have the ability to have a shower and to be able to cook their meals and basically be able to establish a little banding community at the marsh. So if there's anybody out there that would like to contribute, you can do that directly on our website, or you can get in touch with us by just Googling and finding out about how you can contribute to that important initiative. That, and as we are getting close to the magic number of 10,000, which will be matched by the Gosling Foundation, our ultimate goal is to raise $40,000. So if we, once we reach that 10, then we will, the Gosling, as I mentioned, will match, and that will get us on the way. We've also been, I've been busy doing a lot of funding applications, and we'll be finding out in the coming weeks how we fared with those applications. So that could get us to our goal, and we hopefully will be ready to have that 64-foot trailer installed at the marsh in time for our August 1st, deadline to start our fall marsh banding. So that's what we're looking forward to with that contribution. So I've been out talking to various groups I went to talk to the Kirkland Lake Horticultural Society about our banding at the marsh, and a couple of folks at the end of the talk, I was also talking about the Raise the Roost program, and a couple of people gave me checks right after the talk, which was awesome. And I've also recently been talking with the folks at the Lions Club in Charlton and Englehart Club. And I was also talking with the Lions in New Liskeard. So I feel confident that they're going to be contributing to our cause as well. And I had a wonderful chat with both those organizations as well. So, and I'm going to be looking forward to talking with the New Liskeard Rotary Club. So if there's someone out there listening that would like me to come and talk to their organization, not just about our Raise the Roost program, but if there's somebody that would like me to come and do a talk about what we're doing at the Hillyer Marsh Research and Education Center, I'd be delighted to come and meet you and let you know what we're doing at the marsh. So the last topic that I wanted to talk about is the effort that we've recently been doing with outreach. We've been doing, as people may be aware, that we've been doing some banding at Kearns Public School over the last 3 or 4 years. And we refer to that group of kids there as the School of Flock. And it's really a wonderful school, and it's very, very cool to see how the kids right from grade 6 down to kindergarten have a real interest in birds. And it's very, very exciting to see. And so what we've also recently been doing is we had kids from 2 classes from Central Public have recently been out to the marsh to do some, to bend some red poles. And there's going to be a rendezvous of the kids from Central Public. So the grade 6 class and the grade 4 and 5 class are going to be visiting the kids at Kearns on May 1st. And we are going to be having a total bird day where we're going to be, doing a little bit of banding there. And we're also going to be, doing some birdhouse construction and teaching the kids a little bit more about eBird and about, just about honing their bird observation skills and introducing them to ideas like birding by ear, and just showing them some more ideas about how they can be more effective bird watchers. So we are definitely looking forward to that. So that wraps up episode number 2 of Bird Banter with Boreal Bruce. A couple of thank yous here go out to our technical director and the guy that puts us all together, Ben McPherson, and to our guests, Francis Whalen and Nick Alioto. And that's it for episode 2. Signing off, bird is a word.